and welcome to another episode of Radio Warnerd. The date today is June 23rd, 2025. What a year this has been so far. What's bad for the world is good for Radio Warnerd, I guess. I am the co-host, Mark Ames, in Western New York. You're listening to Radio Warnerd. Subscribe at patreon.com/Radio Warnerd. And I'm on the line, of course, with the Warner, John Dolan, a.k.a. Gary Brecher in Cancun. How's it going there?
Oh, well, you know, Cancun is not exactly the center of events at the moment. So,
yeah,
I was just kind of vaguely wondering, God, we're not going to get apocalypse stranded here in the old Doom novel way, are we?
I know.
Because it's too hot and the AC would probably go out.
Yeah, it's been, speaking of heat, we're in the middle of a heat wave. So it's my kids, this is supposed to be the last 2 days of school for my kids, but one day's canceled and the other was cut in half because we're having a 100-degree heat index. And there was a tornado, a deadly tornado, about 100 miles east of here yesterday. A lot of weird weather. Like, I was talking to somebody who's been involved in climate politics for, like, I don't know, 30 years. She was on the show, Joe Costello. He stayed with me for a day.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, one of the best things I heard about this, and I heard this was from some scientist I was talking to, like, 20, 30 years ago, was it's not, you know, they'll call it climate change or global warming, but the more accurate way to call it is climate weirdness, because you can't really predict what's going to happen. You just know it's going to get weirder. We got climate weirdness.
And it will have plenty of apocalyptic stuff. I remember somebody who was in the Middle East for a few years who said, you can understand why they thought of a sky god who was capricious and moody, because the weather is just constantly doing weird things. And
and
now that cyclones have come to the East Coast, I guess we'll get a new phase of mysticism.
Yeah. Yeah, I always wondered also, like, what did, the American Indians think of these massive tornadoes that they inevitably would have confronted, you know, in the Midwest in the centuries before, the white man invaded, and what did they think of tornadoes? I don't know. Because they just blow, they seem to me the most godlike of all weather events, you know.
The most omen laden.
Yes.
Because they seem to cut through towns, and when you crawl out of the basement and notice that your own home is intact while your next door neighbor's has been obliterated, or vice versa, you would start to think, okay, what is God saying here?
And just the colors too. Like, I remember driving through Louisiana once, you know, many years ago with some friends from New Orleans to Baton Rouge. So it's all very kind of swampy on some kind of elevated road. And there was a tornado watch or whatever, and you started to see the sky. It actually turns green. It's like black green. And it put fear in me, yes. It makes you think about things. That's I guess, our lead-in to the actual apocalypse that's going on right now, or the sort of farcical apocalypse, I guess. I don't know.
The good college try at an apocalypse.
Yeah. Yeah, it happened, of course, between last episode and this one. Trump went ahead with Operation Midnight Hammer.
And may I say, can we stop with the cheesy Golan Globus Films titles here?
Yeah.
Like, why Midnight Hammer?
It's like an so 80s cheesy. power pop or like hair metal band name. Midnight Hammer and Down the Green.
or one of those even sadder rock shows for kids of that era who weren't cool enough to go to the real thing.
Yeah,
like, you know, somebody's Midnight Hammer. I think it actually was called Midnight something that I watched. And you'd watch 90 minutes of incredibly bad
Midnight
music.
Special.
Midnight special. Special, yeah.
Or is that
you'd
the
watch
song?
90 minutes of incredibly bad music just to get to the one band that you kind of liked, and then they'd do the wrong song, and you really thought, even as a teenager, God, I'm doing something wrong here.
Yeah, you're frustrated. You know it sucks, but you don't know there's a whole other world waiting on the wings that's about to explode. You know, or that you're allowed to access it for him, so you're just stuck with this. Right. So getting back to Midnight Hammer, and we'll talk about some of the lead up to Midnight Hammer. It's interesting. What persuaded Trump to bomb? Spoiler alert. Seeing that it looked cool and watching on Fox News how much praise somebody else was getting for bombing Iran, and he wanted to be part of it. That's pretty much it. But anyway, so the operation was actually a massive operation, right, John? I mean,
truly massive. Hundreds of planes.
Yes.
This wasn't the way it was marketed. It was marketed as quick stealth strike in and out. But 125 aircraft, including the B-2s, which are the most expensive, if not the most effective, planes the U.S. Air Force ever deployed.
$4 billion each in 2024 dollars.
Yeah.
It is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. And they have no real use. There's nothing they can do that missiles couldn't do. But we talked about that before. The sacred triad of the U.S. military establishment. It includes one post for, what is the Hindu triad? I don't know. Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, I think. So you got to have three. Mm-hmm. And the piloted kind has to be continued even after missiles can do anything that a pilot bomber can do.
Isn't
for no
the triad thing,
reason.
The three thing, kind of a running joke in Flann O'Brien's at Swim Two Birds?
Yeah.
Everything has to come in threes. Wasn't it at Swim Two Birds? I think it was.
Or was it Third Policeman? Third Policeman.
Okay,
He smuggled a lot of his jokes in there. So for no reason, this zombie weapon is getting pushed into the forefront and probably will be for another 30 years or however long the U.S. empire lasts.
Yeah. So just to recap, these B-2s were flown out from Missouri. They sent some B-2s the other way because to head fake the Iranians. I mean, if the Iranians were head faked, I got us. They do need to step down at this point. Like, if they were head faked by this, Trump was, he couldn't keep it in. And in fact, some Pentagon people were complaining, like he kept giving the game away. And so they did something that supposedly only Russians and Asiatics do, maskirovka. You know, they sent some planes the other way. They did a deception move that apparently Westerners were too honest to do.
Well, according to the New York Times. The antecedent is, I don't know, what Daniel Boone did 200 years ago.
Yeah. So these seven B-2s, one of which, by the way, they let everybody know, proud we are, one of them was piloted by a woman. So progress there.
I remember Christopher Hitchens gloating about how women were bombing Iraq. Mm-hmm. And it was all too familiar. Like, they trot out the usual window dressing for the same old solution, which is we're going to bomb them.
Yeah. So they dropped 14 of these 30,000-pound GBU-57 bunker busters. They call them massive ordnance penetrators. Delivered a total of 420,000 pounds of explosives in these 14 bombs. On their way to flying in, before the B-2s got there, they did another, you know, this would be standard, but it's an expensive operation, a kind of testing and deception move. They sent a nuclear submarine into, like, right near Iran and fired a bunch of Tomahawks. And then the Tomahawks were surrounded by, or at least in front of the Tomahawks were some American fighters. And it was to test the Iranian air defenses, to draw them out, to see if they had any fighters, to sort of confuse them for when the B-2s came in shortly after that. They dropped most of their bunker busters on Fordo, which we've talked about, which is a supposedly a nuclear enrichment, a uranium enrichment site, or a nuclear facility, as they say, buried half a mile inside a mountain. It's all very mountainous area, under God knows how many hundreds of feet of concrete and how it's reinforced and how it's tunneled.
I mean, we had some Warnerd posters citing an interesting and kind of overlooked story about improvements in concrete design. Right. And apparently there's a real war going on inside the defense industry between the makers of new reinforced concrete and the makers of bunker buster bombs. And I'm sure this is very lucrative for everybody concerned because the beauty of the defense industry. You're working to build bunker busters and somebody else, in fact, many other companies, are working to build buster reinforcers. And you both make money at the expense of, you know, healthcare, schools, and all that other dull civics class stuff.
Yeah. So they struck Fordo, Natanz, and Isfahan.
You look at these on a map, they're all in central Iran. Iran is quite a big country, and they're all very near the center. That's standard for nuclear production plants. They were built or designed long ago when it was thought we want to get as far inside our borders as we can, so we'll have warning time when someone attacks. They're all sort of in a triangle in central Iran.
Right. Largest B-2 strike in history. A little bit on the B-2, so I guess it was, you know, it was a Reagan era boondoggle. Designed then, and it was. I think the first one flew in 1989, but it was approved far earlier. Very, very expensive, as Reagan's people wanted it. They made a shit ton of money in the Reagan years. They were supposed to build a total of something like 130, 140 of them. They were so expensive, they built only 19. And I think a couple of them are out of service. So Seven is nearly half of the whole fleet. And the B-2 is already on its way out. They're supposed to be building, and it, of course, is delayed, and costs are going up and up and up. They're supposed to be, you know, getting ready to deploy the B-21 Raider, another Northrop Grumman joint.
Yeah, it's astonishing. It really is. I mean, when the B-52 was first designed, people were already saying, why are we still doing piloted fighters? And 75 years later, people are still saying that, but it's turned out to be so lucrative for the whole industry.
Yeah.
Keeping several defense companies afloat in the decades in between, that there is no argument. And really, the gullibility of the American taxpayer when defense appropriations are involved is astonishing. I've seen it because I, you know, oh, yeah. I stealth various internet, you know, feedback sites. And as soon as you mention defense appropriations, they say, freedom isn't free. And all thought stops. It just is a short-circuiting device. Yeah, that's over. So the B1, for example, which was a Reagan-era project, was a big failure. Mm-hmm. It turned out not to be good at anything. So they just made it another B-52 follow-on. Like, right. Yeah, you can dump a lot of bombs from it, you know. Smart bombs? Well, no, not usually. Just, you know, dumb bombs. But they're basically Elon's Cybertruck. It's very expensive. It's very shiny. And supposedly you can use it as a pickup. Like, you know, you can bring some plant back from the shop. Doesn't look like it. I doubt that you could bring back any very large plant or any large bags of fertilizer or whatever, or a hay bale back to your house. But supposedly you can do that. And that's what the B-1 ended up doing.
Yeah. That was, the B-1 was, that was one of the many Reagan-era shockers, the B-1, yeah. That you kind of swallowed if you were still for Reagan. You were just like,
yeah, it actually alienated me. I turned into a peacenik. Like, well, if all you're going to build is like Star Wars and the B-1 and things that are intended not to work, intended that way, because Star Wars was pretty clearly intended to be a fake weapon. I mean, there's a Philip K. Dick novel I've mentioned before called The Zap Gun about Cold War 21st century designers who actually get their ideas from Nigerian comic books in a trance state. And it was pretty much like that.
Yeah. So immediately after dropping these bombs and breaking his promise to, you know, that he made on the campaign trail, and that at least a lot of MAGA really believed. A lot of MAGA America Firsters, the real America Firsters, really believed. He declared it that it was obliterated, and it was one of the greatest successes in the history of warfare, you know, going back to the Romans or whatever. Then we found out within about 12 to 24 hours that actually it didn't succeed. That we don't know, it probably surely damaged Fordo, but that we have no idea where the enriched uranium is and was probably spirited out, and that the 450 kilograms of the enriched uranium that could be turned into bomb weapons grade uranium in a matter of months, and that, you know, supposedly is what scared everybody. That all of it could be put just in the trunk of like 10 regular cars. And going off at different times. And that, in fact, this part kind of blows me away, that in the days leading up to Trump's bombing at Fordo, there were photographs, satellite photographs taken of various trucks and dirt moving equipment just going about their business. And so, you know. So.
And that's where we get an Iranian version of Repo Man. With all these rental trucks speeding away.
Yes. And then somebody opening it up in a parking lot. That's a great one. Yeah, absolutely. The Harry Dean Stanton in that would be like, you know, communist and mullahs. I fucking hate them.
Yep.
But anyway. Right. So,
Oh, by the way, I should mention that as far as I can tell, no nuclear tracker has picked up any enhanced radiation from the site. And first of all, that is a weird way to measure success. Like, we have so successfully broken their nuclear site that dangerous radiation is now welling up through the earth.
Yeah.
But I actually got this from a Radio Warner listener who studies earth sciences and knows this stuff, that these notions that the bunker buster works down to a certain depth, or that we can measure the depth, is largely mistaken, that it depends on the nature of the rock that it has to penetrate and the nature of the reinforced concrete that it has to go through as well. So it may take a long time to filter up through the earth and into the atmosphere. And I guess that good news would be like, oh, we have radiation surging.
Yeah. We have a Chernobyl. We have a Chernobyl. Yeah, yeah, that would be the good news, I guess. But even if there is that detected, that would, we don't know what that means, what was destroyed. We don't know that that means that this specific weapons grade uranium was destroyed. That could be other uranium that, you know, there could be a whole bunch of it down there at different enrichment grades, you know. But the stuff that they're worried about is the 60% enriched uranium, which, depending on who you ask, you know, could become fully weapons grade, which would be 90%. The warmongers say it would only take days. Other more seemingly reasonable people say it would take some months. But it's not a question, like, it's a political question, always. Like, the Iranians have always known if they go all the way to 90%, that would be taken as an act of war. So they want to be close enough to bargain with.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's anybody's guess now what the real reaction is going to be. But I think most people expect at the very least that they're going to withdraw from the non-proliferation treaty to basically align themselves with Israel. You know, because Israel, nobody's bothered by the fact that Israel's not a signatory and that they have 90 nukes and their whole program came from stealing shit from America. But that's
a truly heroic whistleblower spilled it all.
Yeah.
I think his name was Vanunu. And he's still rotting in prison, as far as I know, for that.
Yeah. Because it's the only democracy, John, in a world and in a sea of whatever.
Yeah, this is why democracy doesn't sound that good if you've grown up hearing that over and over again. Like, democracy reminds me actually of regime change operations.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you see a certain kind of cloud, oh, it's going to rain tomorrow. Like, people are talking about democracy. Oh, God, we're going to bomb somebody.
Yeah. So, you know, one thought from people watching this was, okay, this was an operation that went well. It could go bad, you know? It could be like Eagle Claw. I mean, things can go bad. Was that the name of the Carter one, Eagle Claw?
Yeah.
So it didn't go bad for the U.S. and or Israel in a sense, at least with their pilots getting shot down, I guess is what I mean. But it didn't achieve anything, really, as far as we know. And if you give Trump the benefit of the doubt, and that's a big if here, then you have to assume that that was factored in and that, you know, something we've been saying, I think, from early on, I mean, you cannot, none of this makes any sense unless they're going for regime change.
Right.
And the MAGA world's one kind of out in this. I mean, Trump basically decided, and there's an interesting New York Times article on this came out today about how Trump made his decision. It was basically like he's always had one foot, he's always kept the America First restraint wing very close. He has some in his administration. But seeing how successful Israel was on that opening day, just he couldn't contain himself. And then he'd watch Fox News and all they're doing is praising how brilliant the Israelis are. And he's just sitting there like, I got this military. I could be the one on TV. I've got all these weapons. I can't hold back. And he was asking people, you know, don't they all look good? That was actually me. I'm the one. Without me, they couldn't have done it. Me. he just couldn't hold back, and it looked like there wouldn't be any consequences. That said, none of this makes any sense unless they're going for regime change, because you can't kill the program. You maybe can set it back a bit, but you can't kill the program.
Trump tweeted that, right?
Yes.
Like June 22nd, he tweets,
yes,
it's not politically correct to use the term regime change, but if the current Iranian regime is unable to, and here's the cheese, all caps, make Iran great again, why wouldn't there be a regime change? MIGA, as in M-I-G-A, make Iran great again, if you didn't get that. So he's translated into political cheese this reason for going to war. And yeah, I'm quite sure that in this case, the NYT is correct, that Trump just wanted the attention of his main drug, which is apparently Fox News.
Yeah. But I saw this tweet, though, by Trump, because he knew that the restraint wing of MAGA was really against it. He even met Bannon a couple days before. Marjorie Taylor Greene has been consistent, even during the bombing and after the bombing, stating her absolute opposition to it. And I think he's reached the point where he's annoyed with them. I mean, I saw this tweet about regime change because that is a trigger word for MAGA restrainer types who hate George Bush and really don't want, like desperately do not want to be identified with neoconservatism and all that. And I feel like this was him trolling them. Like, what are you going to do? You know, we're doing regime change now. Ha, ha, ha. I feel like, I mean, who else is that not politically correct? He doesn't give a shit about
Democrats. He has to control every wing of the party. And it has a lot of weird wings.
Yeah.
MTG was definitely one of them. And she was shrieking about, she gets out of bed shrieking as far as I know. But she was shrieking about, no, we don't want to do this again. No, we do. But I'm sure she'll come around. And they all will come around because, as I said on social media recently, there's a lot of hate riding on Trump. Trump is probably more a matter of vanity. But, you know, you're talking about distinctions among Milton's Parliament of Fallen Angels. It's like, you know, different variations on horrible. And Trump's horrible might mainly be vanity. But a lot of his followers, especially MAGA voters, are horrible in the sense of grudge. They're the demon of grudge. And all their grudges are riding on Trump.
Yes.
And he can do what he wants, really, as long as he smashes the immigrants who are not hurting them in any way and smashes the students and blah, 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 all the usual people.
But he has made, I totally agree with everything, but he has made a lot of prominent Trump supporters like Tucker Carlson, but even on next level down, people who really believe that the restraint wing had power, he's made them look really bad. This is a bit of a sin. Like, he has embarrassed the shit out of them. He really has. Like, I've seen it from watching a lot of these accounts. They're embarrassed, and yeah, they're going to bend. What are they going to do? Become, you know, Kamala Harris supporters? Like, yeah, they're going to bend, but they have been embarrassed. And that is, and they have large audiences. So the audiences take note of that. Again, I think ultimately it's like if there are no consequences to this, if nothing happens, then it's completely fine for the whole MAGA world. If there are consequences, it could open up fractures at some point. I think one thing that did cause him to be embarrassed after, I mean, one of the virtue signaling or whatever, you know, the virtue signaling that MAGA does to every other wing, the Ted Cruz wing or the Democrats or liberals, is how they're the true part, the true party or the true movement of restraint and non-intervention and peace through strength, whatever, but peace. And it's just, it's embarrassing. Like, you're suddenly no longer anti-system anymore. You've been embarrassed by your leader, and you are doing the embarrassing thing that you know everybody else is kind of laughing at you about.
I would be inclined to agree with you if they were recognizable as human beings. But, and I have to admit here, I find the whole U.S. political scene too distasteful to follow very carefully. But one of the cliches that MAGA usually, the hardcore MTG wing of MAGA usually employs is Ted Cruz was personally and in fact sexually humiliated by Trump, who basically called his wife a whore or something like that. And it didn't stop Ted Cruz from groveling to Trump at all.
Yeah.
And that's kind of scary. And if it's typical, I don't know.
But maybe Cruz was not considered, he's accepted as somebody who supplicated to MAGA, that he did not come from MAGA, and he converted to MAGA.
Wow.
So you have to shame yourself for doing that. But for MTG, Tucker Carlson, and these other, and Bannon, and then there is a large ecosystem out there too. For those people, to them, they are MAGA. They are.
Right.
They don't need. So they may come around. I hear what you're saying. Like, they may also be forced to come around. I don't know. Like, a lot of them think about their future as well. I'm not sure. You know, I think this is a real potentially fracture, but it really depends on how this thing plays out.
Yeah. I mean, Tucker Carlson seems to me like a distasteful but recognizably human person, full of resentments. And it's just, I can imagine all too well Tucker Carlson lying down in bed and thinking, God, I hate this, I hate this, I hate, and really sincerely believing it, but then thinking, okay, but where am I going to go?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with those half-dead so-called Democrats?
No.
Never.
No. No, that's only if they can create. They're not going to abandon Trump. They're not going to abandon Trump, but they're going to be kind of resentful about this. Mm-hmm. And that could become something more if things fail, because they're going to want to preserve their America first. But if nothing really happens, things go on, people move on to the next thing, people are outraged about, you know, riots, as they call it in Los Angeles, whatever, it'll all be forgotten. I totally agree with you.
And that's where the time lag comes in. Like, remember when George W. Bush got reelected in 2004, the Iraq invasion had already gone bad.
Yes, yes.
But his advisors, if not he, counted on the lag and the stubbornness, the stubborn resentment, really, of his followers, who by 2006 were probably actually ready to vote for, well, Obama or proto-Obama. But in 2004, they were not. They just held the course.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, let's take a break here, listen to some music from our man Brendan Andrig, and we'll come back and try and imagine what hell awaits us. Thank you. Okay, we're back from a break, and wouldn't you know it, you know, we were going to talk about where this might go from here. And during our break, as we were, you know, taking a break, we just saw that Iran has fired missiles, sent missiles right at the American base at the Al Udeid Air Base in Qatar. It's one of the large, maybe the largest U.S. military base in the Middle East region. And there's talk that maybe other bases in the area are also going to be targeted. I guess the first thing I might say is I find that very polite of Iran to do this during the show when we could bring it up rather than after the show. So points for that.
A little but, courtesy.
Yeah,
a little is courtesy. It really so difficult?
It was clear something was happening because about shortly before we recorded, there was chatter coming out about the U.S. embassy in Qatar was telling everybody there to, you know, stay in place, to not go outside. You started seeing tankers turning away from the Persian Gulf, from the Straits of Hormuz. One thing I just find amazing, though, is that, and now there's already footage coming out of air defenses trying to engage the Iranian missiles over Qatar. One thing I find kind of amazing is that oil prices thus far have barely gone up during this.
Yeah, because one of the darker suggestions that American dissident commentators have suggested is that most of the Gulf oil goes to China.
Yes.
And if Trump shares the Washington, D.C. consensus that we got to kneecap China somehow before it takes control of the world economy while we were busy promoting wars, but they don't say that part, is to cut off its energy supply. So maybe they see it as a two birds with one stone thing.
There is a lot of that talk. You know, I find that just kind of fanciful. I mean, these are from the same people who said they were going to turn the ruble into rubble and Russia wouldn't get another a drop of oil or gas out again, and et cetera. I mean, yeah. Oil, it's like when we had Ben Aris on. Oil is going to find us. When there people want to buy it, China wants to buy it, they're going to find oil. The price might go up a bit if they have to buy it from somebody else and pay a little more, but it's fungible, as they say, and it's they'll find a way to get it. But I'm sure those knuckleheads are thinking that, haha, we're doing a twofer here. So yeah, this has happened. We don't know. You know, it's obviously, since we're recording this right now, we don't know how this is going to play out, how many missiles have been fired, if they're going to fire in waves, how many bases they're going to try and hit, whether they're going to expand it.
But we did mention in the last show that the obvious, well, one of the many obvious moves for Iran, if attacked, is to strike outside the American heartland, because America is vastly overextended and by choice. And it's all over the place. It's all over the Gulf. It's all over Central Asia. Iran has a lean into many areas where there are vulnerable American assets, and they can't all be protected.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, some other missiles are being fired at U.S. bases in Iraq. Don't know exactly where in Iraq. I guess, would that be probably in the Kurdistan area? I'm not sure.
I don't know. There are still some American troops in Iraqi Kurdistan, but not many.
No.
Not very important. And I pray it doesn't come to an Iran versus Iraqi Kurdistan war. But it might. I don't know. I guess Qatar is not something that Iran would want to target.
Yes.
More broadly, because there's probably very, very sticky commercial relations. And there's also a very big Shia population in Qatar. Not that the ruling family enjoys that, but they're there. So you don't want to make their lives more difficult.
Yeah, especially in Bahrain, it's almost all Shia. I was reading something about the different Gulf state reactions. I mean, of course, the Saudis, the UAE, Bahrain, they don't like Iran, but they've finally made peace with Iran because they think the U.S. has just sort of lost its way and they're not reliable anymore. So they figure it's just bad for business to put all their eggs in the sort of in the war basket because the U.S. just isn't that good at it anymore. The argument is basically like the Saudis and the UAE would not mind, of course, if Iran was very successfully taken down and replaced with some kind of Shah-like regime, like in a perfect world and without spreading chaos. But they don't believe that that could happen. They don't believe it wouldn't spread chaos. Whereas Qatar and Oman have had a friendlier relationship with Iran, not because they see eye to eye with Iran, but more like because Qatar and Oman are so suspicious of the Saudis and the UAE to a lesser extent, but particularly the Saudis, that they've kind of made certain level of common cause with the Iranians as a kind of, I don't know, as a leverage a bit against against the Saudis. So I would think the Iranians are not going to try and hit Qatari gas installations. Qatar is a natural gas exporter giant. But John, I think a big question is if they're going to try and shut the Straits of Hormuz, the Persian Gulf down.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Iran has more strategic judgment than the United States does. So what they're going to do might be more a matter of cold calculation. They might do it, but depending on who the cost falls on, they might not want to. I mean, there'd be an option to just charge more tolls, but I don't think they'll do that either. So I can't really say. I'm just not lucky with my predictions, so yeah. I'll stay out of it.
Yeah, I know. It's a fool's game, the prediction business. And here is just also as we started recording the show, going back to what we were talking about before the break, the latest MTG tweet, she posts a video of something of Bannon talking. I haven't heard it yet, so I don't know what's in there. But what she says is, MAGA is not for foreign wars. We are not for regime change. This is a direct challenge to Trump.
Yes.
We are for America first. The United States should not be involved in fighting nuclear-armed Israel's war with Iran.
Yeah. It would be weird to have MTG as a champion, but
yes,
what can you do?
I know, because there is no opposition party.
None, and they've gotten away with vanishing. It's really strange.
It's very, very weird. You know, at the No Kings rally where I took my wife and I took our kids to it. It was their first protest they ever went to. They were scared to go at first. And once they went to it, my older son was very sensitive about things. But once he went to it and got this sense of a bunch of people, and it was huge for our little town, a bunch of people, leaving aside whether it was a Democrat, liberal, who cares? It was people organizing against the government. That was great. My older son was really loved it. He felt, he was like, I want to go to more of these. I mean, he felt this sense of when you're with people protesting the state, protesting the president you don't like, that when you're with a lot of other people in a community like that, you feel something you haven't really felt before, which is kind of engaging in politics, you know, and a bit of power, even if it's illusory. But
there really isn't much of shared ritual in middle class American life, and I felt that very strongly as a child.
Like, yes,
I wanted to be together with people in some way and be a community, but I don't know. We had various quibbles with all the available communities.
Yes.
And it is a really good feeling, and it's something that this culture does not reward very much.
No. I just wonder, there's going to be another one on July 4th, and I wonder if, I'm sure there's a Democratic Party hand behind it, because the slogan is No Kings, which is kind of a direct challenge to Bernie's slogan, which is, you know, no oligarchy, basically. It's about oligarchy and the donors, the people that cater to the donors really didn't like it. We're arguing.
No, but they can prove they're not kings. Look, there's my photograph. There's no crown on my head. See,
exactly.
We're not kings.
I'm just a regular billionaire.
What was that rash of Colbert, Jon Stewart rallies?
Oh, the Rally for Sanity.
That's it. Rally for Sanity.
Yeah.
Like it's when Marge invents Love Day on The Simpsons. Like, we're all for love, aren't we? Sure, okay. But oligarchy, no, that actually means something.
Yeah, it was. You got to start somewhere is all I can say. And it's kind of shocking. Like I've had a back and forth with friend of the show, Eileen Jones, who's in the next over West New York City, Buffalo. And she said one thing that really just bothered her so much is that there is no DSA or kind of any left of Democratic Party political organization going around and trying to organize, you know, whoever in the protest would be receptive to their message. There's just a vacuum. It's just an unbelievable vacuum. I saw Bernie had a speech and he in Tulsa, and this is great. I mean, he and AOC are going to red states and red communities and drawing thousands of people because there's nothing. People are dying for something. I saw that in my own suburb here in Western New York. People are dying for something, someone to lead something. So he goes to Tulsa, there's thousands of people there on the Saturday night, and then he sees somebody hands him the tweet by Trump gloating about bombing Iran, and he reads it off. And everybody starts booing, and they spontaneously start yelling, no more wars, no more wars. No, and this is not like, the crowd is not like, blue state upper middle class. This is Tulsa, and you can tell by it's they look like that.
Yeah, and you can also tell by that, I think, that the Democratic Party is not paralyzed. It's simply choosing not to be alive at the moment.
Yes.
Because if they were alive, they might rouse people. And that is the very last thing they want to do.
They're for this.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but they're either for this or they're not really against it. They want this to happen without having to take the fall for it. They are hoping that, this will happen and then Trump takes the fall for it. I don't think they're donors and most of the people, I think they're for this. They're for a lot of what Trump's doing. The cuts, to slashing government, the kicking out immigrants. They would do it differently if they did it, but they're for a lot of this. But even Bernie disappointed, because as this spontaneous chanting of no more wars came out, he kind of grabbed that energy, stopped them, and he said, and not only that, but the thing that I find really outrageous is that the Constitution says that only Congress has the right to start a war, and so we must make sure the Constitution. He turned it into this civics class thing, and all of them are doing it. All the ones on the left, except for Rashida Tlaib, she's really the only Democrat, really, who's like, no, this is bad. This is war.
Yeah.
It's bad.
And I mean, the American people, in some ways, are pretty goddamn gullible, but they're not totally stupid.
Yeah.
They know that we've had something like 12 wars without the normal, supposedly constitutional procedure to approve a war through Congress. It doesn't happen anymore. It doesn't have to happen. And giving a civics lecture about how Trump is violating it is, well, so did every other president in my long, wretched lifetime.
Yeah, including Biden. And it goes back, as we did an episode with William Hoagland about the founding of the U.S. Army. It goes back to Washington's first Indian Wars. They weren't declared. They just happened. There have been a few declared wars. Those are like, because they had to organize the country much more. But especially since the Cold War started, since FDR kind of really centralized things into the national
security.
Well,
yeah, the whole nuclear triad was not based on, let's get Congress together in an emergency session, you know, and bring them back from Ketchum, Idaho, where they're visiting their constituents so they can approve something. It was like, can we do this in 5 minutes? Can we launch in 2 minutes? None of that involved congressional rules or procedures. And Congress went along with that out of sheer red-baiting terror.
So, so we're alone out here. We are alone. And the same in Europe. I mean, the European political class is fully behind, all of them behind. You know, their response to Israel's bombing of Iran was to denounce Iran for forcing Israel to bomb them. they're all in this. And
why are you making your daddy abuse you so much?
So,
I got to say, Europeans, I'm a little disappointed. I thought you guys had gone sane, but no.
Yeah. So Iran has warned that if it's attacked, it would close the straits. Now, maybe it's saving that for if things escalate to another level. So maybe it's going to go kind of step by step here. We'll see. But if they close it off, that's a real issue. 20% of the world's LNG passes through the Strait of Hormuz. You know, a huge part of oil comes out of there. It doesn't matter.
I mean, everybody should look at a map again, because it's one of the most extraordinary geographical features of the world, especially after people realized how much oil was up there, you know, at certain points along the other end of the strait. It's extraordinary. You would pick it in a very overdetermined fantasy novel as, oh, there's a choke point. There's a big choke point.
Yeah, so, but there are other ways this could very obviously easily escalate, and that is basically this. While Israel's opening attacks and its various attacks have been very successful on the tactical level, what have they achieved so far?
Right.
I would say maybe.
Well, Netanyahu is apparently popular again. That, you know.
And they got the U.S. directly involved. I would say those are the two biggest wins for them so far. But they haven't. But
it's an old playbook, and I don't know how many times you can do that. Maybe the U.S. will not be effective anymore, or maybe the U.S. will be hurt in some way that makes them recoil. I don't know. But meanwhile, you know, I sometimes think you got to realize how much of a media world there is that's still slogging along obediently with all this. And we're a tiny, noisy, and tremendously amiable minority, but meanwhile, like this BBC security briefer, Mikey Kay, who's some kind of spook in some way, says in answer to a BBC listener's question, Israel has neither confirmed nor denied that it has a nuclear capability. As it stands, there is no overt declaration by Israel on any of the above. He's saying this to gullible news fans in Britain and around the world who might actually believe it and believe in the, by the same token, that somehow the Iranian regime does have nuclear weapons. Whereas the fact is, Israel has many nukes, fully functional. Iran, as far as anybody has been able to prove, does not.
They're almost certainly going to try to build them now. Whether they'll be able to or not is anybody's guess. And I'm not even sure what whole lot of good they would do them, except that they kind of, I'm sure the logic within the regime of being attacked for this, the logic's going to say they're going to have to go for it, you know.
That's what every nuclear power says. I mean, and compared to Pakistan, I'd say on the record, Iran has a much more stable elite than Pakistan does.
Right. I just mean, I really wonder, so if they set one off, prove they had it, would that stop the U.S. or Israel from bombing them? I really don't know.
Yeah.
I think it might drive them crazier.
It might. I mean, I don't know. Suppose they... I don't want to speculate that far. But at the moment, there is this overwhelming sense that I mentioned in a tweet recently that we have an elite that has outlived its era. And doesn't really see any future or any purpose for itself. And in that, they are right. They're very right.
Yeah.
But they might, and I think large portions of the electorate in the U.S. at least, have decided that, therefore, we have no stake in this. Like, let the world burn, whether from global warming or nuclear war. We're on our way out, so the hell with it. And in that way, yeah, they might decide to go with the nukes.
But I mean, what do they do from here? Now, they're not achieving the goal. The regime is still there. If they kill Khamenei, all it does is escalate. Maybe they want to do that, but it's not gonna. It is a big structure, that regime. It's a very it's a pretty solid state. They're not that great at counterintelligence, right? We can say that.
That's been demonstrated, yes.
But they have been very good at repressing internal dissent. Yeah. And they've had a lot of time to build all those structures.
The idea of the MEK replacing them, which is still current in some Washington, D.C. circles, is truly comic. I mean... the MEK was discredited forever in most Iranians' opinions when it joined Iraq in invading Iran. And it has no popular currency at all, as far as I know. But people are still taking it seriously. So, yeah, I don't see the IRI getting replaced at all. There's this small Arab minority along the coast that they keep hoping will do something big. But it seems to be good for the occasional act of sabotage and nothing beyond that. Most of the population, even the Azeris, consider themselves part of Iran and consider themselves Islamic. And you're not going to change that.
I mean, look, we couldn't get, the U.S. could not regime change Saddam Hussein after destroying much of his forces in the first Gulf War, carving out, you know, no-fly zones in the north and the south, bombing at will, starving the country through sanctions, starving them of medicines, doing everything to undermine the regime. They had to actually invade.
Yeah.
To take them out. It doesn't really work like that.
And really, I mean, if there's any faction that you could play with in Iran and in a very Machiavellian way, it would be urban youthful left. And I don't think anybody who's anybody in Washington likes any of those things.
Yeah.
So they're probably not going to want to play with them very much.
Speaking of all this, I'm gonna read off this tweet from Rudy Giuliani, and I'll explain it in a second. He just tweeted this out. Reva Pahlavi, that's the son of the Shah. Reva Pahlavi, funny, it rhymes with Chalabi. Reva Pahlavi is the son of the Shah, who was a brutal, hated dictator. He offers nothing but a return to his father's corrupt dictatorship. For decades, the Savak, his father's secret police, persecuted, tortured, and murdered Iranians. Now, all that's true, but why do you think Giuliani tweeted that out?
Giuliani tweeted that?
Yeah, why do you think he would do that? Why would he possibly do that? I mean, this is a trick question, I guess, but I'll tell you the answer. Because he is a lobbyist for the MEK.
Oh,
and there's
my
two factions right now fighting for those Langley black bags of cash.
My God.
And so there's like a kind of a bum fight going on in North Virginia between the lobbyists for the MEK and the lobbyists for the Shah's son.
That is so outlandish. It's perfect material for satire. Like, you know, when the forger who called himself George Salmanazar pretended to be a Formosan and taught English missionaries the Formosan language, which he'd made up in his head.
Wow.
And got funding to send missionaries to Formosa.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yep.
That's quite an elaborate scheme there.
Oh, yeah. He was a shyster from the south of France.
Wow.
And, or he was genuinely crazy. I don't know. But I don't think so. I think he just
It's hard to make
somebody.
A buck, man. It's hard to make a buck out there unless you're born rich. And it's easier to make a buck. So I think, you know, we can end it here. We just wanted to do a quick emergency episode. We've been doing a lot of them lately. Just watching this with jaws agape on the floor, so to speak. It's so wild that this is happening. And one of the reasons this is happening, I mean, there are many of the very same people who said Iraq will be a cakewalk. We got to go into Iraq. Are writing the exact same op-ed in the same media outlets, but just switching out, or you know, the Q for N. No one paid, and this is what you can't. You don't have a functioning democracy if there is literally zero accountability. You either get into the class and then you're tenured for life for saying the right things, or you're not in the class. And if you say the wrong things, like being right too early, like for example opposing the Iraq War, those are the only people who paid. There were careers that were killed for opposing the Iraq War. You could do it safely maybe by sort of 2005-06, but before then you were toast. And then after that, no one who pushed that war paid. No one paid. The only way, funny enough, to make people pay, there was kind of Obama was, he absorbed a lot of the anti-Iraq war vote because Hillary had voted for it. And Obama was always really cagey about it. But then when he realized he had gone the right way, they drudged up some recording, like a bootleg recording of a speech he gave when he was on a city assembly saying the Iraq war was not a good idea. And that was the best we could get at that time, I think. So he was the anti-war candidate. But Trump really also, I mean, 2016, he was up there calling everybody in the primaries, the GOP primaries, idiots, fools, losers for supporting the Iraq war, and said he wasn't against it initially, but he said he was against it, and that was enough.
So, yeah, I mean, if at this point people, voters, continue to behave like rubes, then it's hard to escape the conclusion that they are rubes.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of rubes, I don't know if you saw him. We'll leave it. I think at least I'll leave it with this. J.D. Vance, who's supposed to kind of represent the restraint wing of MAGA and has kind of tried to preserve however he can his sort of quote-unquote credibility with that. He just came out. He had to, you know, issue a bunch of kind of obsequious, this is a great thing, this war is all right, tweets and statements. And then one of his tweets said, I understand a lot of people who are against, you know, who are fearful and oppose another war in the Middle East because of all that's gone on in the last 25 years and the lost wars. But there's a difference between this time and last and the other times. Those times, the presidents were stupid. This time, the president is really smart and knows what he's doing. It was basically.
I don't think we can top that.
No, I mean, that as somebody said, he actually channeled the Democratic Party thinking and said it out loud, you know?
Yeah.
It's weird. It was like MAGA on the outside or, you know, and Democrat on the inside or something. That's how Democrats think. Everything we do is right because we're so qualified and smart.
Yeah.
But that was basically your Rubes.
Yep.
Fuck you. We're doing it. Yeah. On that happy
note. A
Rube
is a Rube.
Yeah. On that Ruby note, I think we can end this episode on the America entering another war in the Middle East. Isn't that wonderful? Talk to everyone soon. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, John.
Thanks everybody. Bye.